For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, second half kickoff here for the morning show presented by St. Mary's Medical Group. Dave and Logan along with you. Going to be another warm day. We're sitting at 50 right now. Supposed to get up to 70. It was gorgeous yesterday. The high around 75 or so. We do have some rain moving in. Tomorrow, they're still going to be warm in 71. Thursday, 66. And then it'll cool off on Friday with a high of 51.
Hey, quickly, I want to drop this little nugget on you because Steve Colquitt dropped it on me. Speaking of Purdue football players.
Yeah.
According to Steve, Purdue actually has the longest Super Bowl streak in the nation at 20. Georgia, Mecole Hardman was the 19th consecutive year that we've had a Georgia representative, UGA, in the Super Bowl. LSU is also at 19, so we got to... Someone's got to break up the Purdue football program.
That's actually interesting.
I wouldn't have thought.
Big Ten school has had the most consecutive Super Bowl appearances? Ohio State? No. Nope.
The Boilermakers.
Michigan? Nope.
I thought a Boilermaker was something our fathers drank. Late Saturday.
Time to bring in Chip Towers from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the AJC.com. Chipper, how are you this morning?
Hey, fantastic. Enjoying this spring, winter.
Mm-hmm. I know. My wife's like, the daffodils are all blooming and they're going to die. Like, I know. It happens every year. Like, I wasn't thinking about that. Does. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, what were you about to say? I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I hope you got out and played golf somewhere. It's like a jury summons when you get over 70 and. In January, you're hereby ordered to lay all other business aside and report to a T-box.
That's what I'm talking
somewhere,
about.
Which I did yesterday for
good.
The first time in a long time.
Excellent. Yeah. Glad to hear that. Yeah. You get a day like this in January, you got to take advantage of it for sure.
I assume you hit them long and you hit them straight, right, Chip?
Well, I don't know about that. I did hit them a lot, which was good.
There you go.
Got a lot of practice from the rough yesterday.
Well, since Chip had been dealing in all these numbers, you know, he's just getting the scorecard out and continuing on. How long? So the story you had yesterday about the financial records for Georgia, how long have you been working on that one?
Well, you know, I've been, you know, every year, every program does this. By January 15th, you have to basically turn in your financials to the NCAA. And, you know, it's always interesting. Some people don't find that stuff all that kind of interesting, but it's really a matter of, you know, taking care of the checks and balances that is our job to do as journalists. So it's just kind of a glance at Georgia's bottom line, glance to see what they're spending money on. I mean, you know, we all know that in the SEC and in college football and Power Five football in particular right now, everybody's making a lot of money. So it's just an opportunity to kind of see how they're spending it, where it's going. At the end of the day, Dave, these are nonprofits. That's the way it's supposed to work. And it's interesting that, you know, the profits are getting bigger and bigger, you know, in college athletics. And since they can't spend it on they spend as much as they possibly can on the student athletes without just handing them money, without just giving them paychecks. So much of the money goes toward, you know, buildings, facilities, and coaches. That's where the majority of the money goes nowadays. And, you know, there's a lot of other expense. And I think Georgia does as good a job or better than most anybody of taking care of their student athletes, whether it be, you know, I mean, training, medicine, certainly academic support, training table, nutrition. Now has become, that's a number you've continued to see get bigger and bigger and bigger. They spend more and more money on not only, you know, there used to be a time you were limited in how often you could feed these guys. Now they can feed them 24/7, and they feed them very, very well. Nutritionists are a big part, you know, of the modern day athletic department is having professional nutritionists to make sure these guys aren't just eating a bunch of Cheetos all day, that they're eating really well. And so it's interesting for me, maybe not everybody, but it's interesting for me anyway.
Chip, one of the things that maybe Greg has gotten beat up on a little bit over the years about Georgia's tight on the spending, and there's money out there that could be used for other things. But then when I read the story like you've written here, it's like Georgia's spending a lot of money on stuff. So is that unfair? Is that, do you think that's an unfair characterization of the athletic department as far as the spending goes?
I do believe it is an unfair characterization of the athletic department nowadays. I don't think it was always the case. I mean, you know, going back to Joel Eaves and Vince Dooley after him, it was different then, and those guys were tight-fisted, and, you had to squeeze every bit of profit out of your, and I put quotes, air quotes around there, every bit of profit, you had to keep expenses down in order to keep your bottom line up so that you could fund all the other sports. Georgia has 21 sports. And, I don't think I even got into this in my story, but, there are 21 sports at Georgia. There's only one of them that makes any money, and that's football. All the rest lose. Basketball about breaks even.
It gets bailed out by the TV contract, right?
By the SEC TV contract. Yeah. But the rest of them are all – and not just, they don't lose just a little bit of money. They lose a lot of money because they're trying to treat them equitably as much as possible as they do with the football team. So it's incredible when you get to look at these ledgers at just really how much of the engine football is. Everybody knows that. We all hear it. But when you see the bottom line, it's incredible. You think about it. I think this is a complete mischaracterization of Greg McGarrity, and I'm not sure why it actually got that way. I mean, I think it was a little bit more true of Damon Evans beforehand and Frank Crumley and that regime.
Yeah.
But since, you got to think, Greg McGarrity showed up, and one of his first official acts was to have to cut the red ribbon on the what did they call that? The
multi-purpose room.
The multi-purpose room. That was one of the first things that he had to do, was to cut the ribbon on that thing. And we all realized that I mean, right from the beginning, like, what is this? This is not an indoor facility. You can't use it. What is this? And
it was a lunchroom for the media.
Yeah, that's basically what it came down to. And for special events on for recruits, that thing's been raised. I'm not even sure. It's been fully paid off at this point. That was a $30 million deal that is no longer even there. But since then, I mean, you're talking about $120 million just in football projects that have been pouring in there. And look, I'm not saying, that's all Greg McGarrity. He just happens to be leading the Georgia athletic program at a time where money is pouring in at an unprecedented rate. Due to the SEC network, due to the television contracts, it's going to go up from here, guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, with the recent news that, CBS was going to end their agreement. Now, a lot of people are like, oh, that's a bad thing. CBS is in. And CBS and the SEC have had a fantastic relationship, but now it's an open bidding war on who's going to get that contract next time. I predict ESPN will win, and it'll be for a lot of money. And so it's not going down from here. I think the name, image, and likeness, what that's going to look like, I don't know. But that's going to really kick into gear going forward, because these guys are producing, football in particular, but basketball as well, just a ton of money for collegiate athletics. And they're going to have to figure a way to be a little bit more equitable in the division of that goodwill.
Chip Towers from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the AJC.com, joins us.
Chip, one thing that did go down was donations. I'm thinking, that is this Hartman Fund, McGill Society, 2018, $67.7 million, but last season, $52.5 million. What goes into those things, and is that any concern at all for Georgia?
No, I asked McGarity about that, and, you know, I mean, it's to be expected as well. I mean, you never want the number to go down. You want it to go up into perpetuity, but you know that's probably impossible. You got to think how much these, particularly those McGill donors, mm-hmm. how much they've been hit up for money in the past 5 years. Yeah. I guess it is really since 2016. You know, you're trying to raise money for the indoor practice facility, then you're raising money for the West End, now you're raising money for the $80 million football facility. I mean, you know, you can only tap them for so long, and that particular spike, you know, came right after the 2017 season. Now, if you could have maybe, you know, managed to cash in 2018 and made the playoff again and you know, certainly finally crossed that finish line for a national championship, maybe the number would have gone up again. But that's just, you know, to be expected. And, you know, the generosity of Georgia donors never ceases to amaze me. I mean, they are very generous. It's a wealthy fan base. People that go to University of Georgia and graduate and become alumni, they love their school. They love their program. They tend to go into jobs that make good money, and they tend to give, you know, a portion of that back. And when you're talking about McGill Society, you know, at a minimum, you're talking about $5,000 a year. You know, a lot of people can afford that and figure, that makes good sense to them. And so, you know, they're producing more and more graduates every year. So I don't think they'll ever deviate a whole lot away from that number. I don't have everybody's financials to be able to compare mm-hmm. what that looks like, but, you know, it's certainly pretty impressive, I think, just on its own merit.
There was also that change in the tax law, was it a couple of years ago, too, that you had to, you know, if you were going to get credit for donations, that was all going to change. So I know that also brought a little bit of a spike there in donations where you don't have that now. And
that's a great point. Yeah. You can't write off those donations anymore. I'm sure that had an effect.
Absolutely. Yep. And not just Georgia, but, you know, I guess, you know, every school fell
Everybody,
under that. Yeah, fell under that umbrella there.
Another facet of spending here, which is fascinating to me, is just the football recruiting, the numbers there that I forgot where I saw this, but in 2015, whatever the budget was there, it's like four times the amount now. What was it, $3.7 million that Kirby Smart is spending just strictly on football recruiting. Does that top the SEC right now? And I guess it just speaks to a testament of what Kirby prioritizes, right?
Yeah, I do plan on following up on that. As I mentioned in the story, you know, I wanted to go ahead and get this out here. I could have waited until we had every one of the SEC teams in, and we don't yet. But until I get those all in, I won't be able to compare them. And I actually didn't look at Alabama's number. That's the one Georgia usually competes with. I think mm-hmm. last year Georgia was number one in the SEC. And, you know, this is a cornerstone of Kirby Smart's program success. You know, this is one of the pillars that he, you know, it's recruiting. And look, guys, you know, again, different people have different opinions about this. And my job as a journalist is just to put it out there objectively and let people decide on it. I mean, I have request in to find out, you know, how much Georgia's spending on helicopters and charter programs.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's part of the gig. And some people may look at that as excess, you know, but Kirby, you know, Georgia's sitting here today on the eve of another national signing day, ranked number one in recruiting.
Yeah.
And that's got to pay dividends eventually. I mean, I'm pretty blown away by what Georgia's been able to do with this recruiting class this year, and the way they have stacked them up back to back to back to back has been really, really impressive. And Kirby's ability to just not just, you know, flip some guys and convince guys to come here, but to keep them here, you know, because you know, in the case of like somebody like Broderick Jones, who's been committed since his 10th grade year, a 5-star tackle everybody in the country coming after that guy. And, you know, at this point, 24 hours before signing day, you know, it looks like he's going to stick with the Bulldogs. Mm-hmm. And that's man, that's a full-time job. So I get it, but it does come with a cost. And but at the end of the day, Georgia is spending far less than they're making, and that is the charge of Greg McGarrity and that athletic board. And they're doing a good job of it.
Well, don't do me a favor, Chip. Don't tell Florida or Tennessee fans about the recruiting because they think Georgia is going to be a five-win team in 2020. So let's leave them thinking that, if you don't mind.
I'd appreciate that. Everybody feels like they've got a chance.
That's
there.
Right.
You know, another thing that I always find is an interesting question is college athletics a business or is it a family? And I guess in a sense it's both, because if it were a business, as you said earlier, you'd only have one sport, maybe two. But it is a family in the sense that they're carrying, and I'm just saying financially, all of these other sports that don't make money, in fact, you know, lose a lot of money. Where does that, you know, how do you justify that? But this is a nonprofit, so it's not one of these kind of things where you're worried about that kind of stuff. But how does all that stuff play out?
Well, you know, I had a great conversation about this with my wife the other day, Dave, and she was a gymnast at Georgia, a walk on for a brief time, but she's experienced what it is to be a college athlete, and we were watching. It's a Thursday night, and we're flipping around. We're on the SEC Network, and we're watching a women's basketball game. And there wasn't many people there at all. All right, you know, so it's like 8 o'clock on a weeknight, and it looks like there's a couple of hundred people in there for a women's basketball game. But I don't see that as an indictment against women's basketball, because when you watch on the floor, I mean, these are incredible athletes. Whether it's that, whether it's the women's softball team, whether it's gymnastics, whether it's soccer, and these kids or young adults are getting an education, and they are competing at the highest level. I mean, they're really good at what they do. They train just as hard as those football players year round. They just don't have the money. They don't generate the income now, and they don't necessarily have the professional end game that you do in these other sports. But that doesn't mean that they're not worthy of what they do. And that's what it's all about. That's what Greg McGarrity will tell you. That's what the NCAA will tell you, and the people that are in college athletics. That is one part of it, and that certainly is the money-making end of it. But all of that goes to fund everything else. Go look at the Dan McGill tennis complex right now. As much as we love those rickety old wooden bleachers over there, heck, it was starting to get a little dangerous. And you look, they've built a beautiful facility worthy of the name Dan McGill tennis complex over there, and that's all coming out of basically the quote-unquote profits that you're making in all these other areas. That's coming out of Georgia's reserve, and they're able to pay for that, and I think that's a good thing.
I wonder, and I know this is probably in the question and answer, but at some point, you know, and I'll just say coaches' salaries, for instance, and again, football rules the roost, we get it, but now I think Kevin Steele at Auburn, their defensive coordinator, he's going to be making $2.5 million per year. You've got women's basketball coaches that are making $500,000 to, you know, $600,000 a year. You know, you wonder at some point, is there, you know, a ceiling for all of that stuff?
Well, I think there's got to be, and there's a proposal out there right now. To cap salaries, and I think one of the model I've heard is that to not have any coach's salary higher than any other salary on a college campus. Now, look, the reality of making that happen is not going to be easy, because we live in the United States of America, and it's all about equal opportunity and making what you can. But I do think we've jumped the shark on that. You know, when Nick Saban is making $11.5 million and Jimbo Fisher's making $10 million, and hey, Kirby Smart's making $7 million a year, I think that's great, and it's commiserate with the amount of money that the sport is bringing in. But sooner or later, I think it's you know, they're going to have to put a cap on that. Now, yeah, you know, little old sports reporter here, I can't tell you how that happens and how they'll be able to do it. Obviously, everybody will have to agree to it, and I think it's a long time in coming. There's still, I mean, we're starting to really deal with some wrestle with some major issues in college athletics, and name, image, and likeness. I just talked about. Mm-hmm. These guys have been taken advantage of for decades, and you know, I don't know what the answer is there either. I do think that college athletes, by and large, it's a great gig. You know, I mean, if you can get a full ride, you know, at in a Power Five conference in any sport, I mean, that's a great opportunity for you between the athletic support you're going to get, the academic support you're going to get, and all the other perks that come with it. I think it's a great deal. But, you know, when it comes to the amount of money they're making, it's just gotten a little bit ridiculous. They're having to put it into buildings and coaches because that's the only place they can put it right now. So they're going to have to figure out a way to change that.
Man, I could talk for another half hour about this. And by the way, I have to go back and look how many athletic departments in the country are actually in the black. There aren't that many. So,
no.
You know, that's another thing, too. So you got a lot of these athletic departments that are having to keep up with the Joneses by spending more money, and they don't make any money. They lose money to begin with, and it creates a horrible, you know, situation for a lot of schools. And that's where I keep thinking, yeah, too. I'm not salary cap guy. I'm the guy that thinks the market will, at some point, you know, take over and dictate what people make and that kind of thing too. But I mean, right now, when you're, you know, like you're pointing out that TV is doling out $40 million to each institution, and they're going to spend money, they're going to do stuff with it, and a lot of it ends up going to salaries and that kind of thing too. I mean, I find it very interesting, but it almost feels like, is there going to be a point where you can't go any higher? And I don't know if there is at the, you know, at the moment, at the time being.
Well, I mean, I think it's just like the real estate market a few years ago. I mean, the bubble will burst sooner or later, and I don't know how and when that's going to happen because it still tends to be trending up. But you're also starting to see now, you're seeing attendance starting to sag.
Yep.
in college football. So, I mean, I think that may be, you know, one of the telltale, the frog in the swamp, right? I think that might be a little bit of a sign of that people are starting to get, the market's starting to get saturated.
Yeah.
There's so much on TV now. I mean, you think about, it's just like we were talking about. I mean, I'm watching a women's basketball game the other night where there's 200 people in the stands. You know, it's on TV, but is anybody watching it? So, you know, you're right. I think a lot of times the market will take care of itself. But there's also, you know, there's a larger argument that I'm not capable of making when you get in to amateurism and you know, the true college mission. I mean, you want to have your team and win, but you know, you're also, you've got, you know, kids coming from all over the country to really about 10 different schools in America have a realistic chance of winning a national championship in football now.
Yep.
And is that really, you know, is that really the college model? It's gotten almost like women's gymnastics. I mean, I'm as impressed as anybody else with the success that Suzanne Yocklin had in women's gymnastics several years ago. But how many teams in the country could really compete at that particular place and time in history? You know, not really. I mean, maybe five. You know,
mm-hmm.
that was who your competition is. And football's kind of gotten that way now. You know, outside of, you know what, you know, Oklahoma, Clemson, you know, Georgia, Alabama, you know, and Ohio State and several others.
LSU,
you know, there's
I guess.
Not a whole lot of teams.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of teams that have a realistic shot of being in the party. And so you're right. The market will adjust itself eventually, I believe.
Although eventually could be 30 or 40 years from now. Who knows? I mean, the way things are going. But hey, Chip, great, great stuff. Logan, was there anything else we needed to get to? I knew when I read your story yesterday, it was a great job on that, Chip. that we'd have a lot of questions about
yeah,
it.
My head hurts, but in a good way, because Chip made it all very clear for
That's
us.
Right.
So we appreciate
That's right.
it.
Thanks so much, Chip.
All right. See you next
All
time.
Right.
See you, Chip.
Have a good week. Chip Towers from the AJC.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.